There we go.
Yes.
Now we're live. So hello and welcome to the third e-community workshop today with my good friend Nico, also known as the man with the most access to the most CLAR accounts. How many is it? Like 20, 25, something like that?
That's, I think 23 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, just quick word for me, and then you can, of course, introduce yourself. So yeah, Nico, founder of Ecosa, will tell you more about that, but always quite enjoy talking with you because you're one of the guys who from, well, a very early stage, I mean, not now, now it's becoming more and more mainstream, but even like a few years ago, you already, well, always thinking e-commerce quite holistically and not so isolated, which I think was quite unique a year or two ago. And that's kind of like the same way that I always approached it. So yeah, always great talking with you and getting your feature requests of new things you would like to see in CLAR. But with that, maybe you can just do a quick intro on yourself. I know you have a couple of slides prepared. And then we can dive into the topic of how to bridge the gap between marketing and finance.
Yeah, actually, I have my introduction in the slides, so I could also just share them if it's okay.
That's fine.
I'm testing here slides window. Let's test if that is working. Here's the slide.
Does that work? Put that on stage, and there we go.
Yes. Here we are. It's a cool tool, actually.
Quite neat.
Cool. So I'm just starting off. If you have any questions, Max, in between, or anybody else, we have 38 people in here. Just put it in the chat, actually, I would say. Still, we are highly interested. Where are you guys listening from?
So, still no answers.
Still just emojis in the chat. So everybody, feel free to engage with us. We are more than happy to answer a couple of your questions and not just, bomb you with content. But anyways, yeah, nice to meet you. Here's the slide. And thanks, Max, for the introduction. Very cool to hear that I'm the guy who is using the most CLAR accounts. And as you said, I'm a big fan of the tool. Since I think we share a pretty similar philosophy about e-commerce marketing and looking at numbers. And so this is also something I'm talking about today. I called the slides optimizing for profit, or the whole presentation actually. So I'm going to give you basically a marketing operations blueprint so you can optimize not just on ROAS, but on profit. And to start this off, I would say cheers. I'm Nico. This is a rare picture of me not working on e-commerce brands the past 10 years. Actually, I did nothing else my whole life. I had a YouTube channel when I was very young, and I started my first online shop about 11 years now, and started doing my first Facebook ads back in the days when there were like 50 cent CPMs. Sometimes I'm dreaming in the night about these CPMs back in the days. And so, yeah, today, to give you a little bit of a feeling and also just a slight overview, what gives me the right and also why I can help you overcome some of the most complex challenges in D2C commerce. I had the privilege to work with over 250 brands the past 10 years. And amazing brands, a couple of them I have here on the slides. And all of these brands, for sure, did mistakes before working with us, while working with us. Mistakes are awesome if you have the right perspective on them. And our team of now 16 people at the moment here in Munich, they all transcribed these following problems and solutions I'm about to give you today for free, for sure. And you can imagine what we do is basically a huge how to not fuck it up list for in-house teams and D2C e-com founders and senior operators and their marketing teams. And just to give you a little overview, here's like a small process chart. It's actually, we built a complete operating model for extremely high functioning marketing teams in their C-level. And so I'm trying to give you one of the most important things today, and like one of our favorite quick fixes in D2C brands and that is building the bridge between marketing efforts and actual profit. Since a lot of people were optimizing on ROAS, we will look at a couple different KPIs and a couple different actual workflows you can implement right away in your brand to optimize for CM3. And that's going to be the topic and the introduction so far. And Max, should I just keep going or any questions before?
Jump.
Let's go. Adrian says not compliant to answer. Nice. Yeah. Düsseldorf, very nice. René puts the Brezel in there. So Munich. Cool. First off, very important. I don't know how much people are still optimizing a lot of ROAS in here. I think it's one of the holy metrics in e-commerce, right? And in my opinion, I'm just going to drop it. Slow but steady, it's getting more and more a vanity metric, in my opinion. Why? It doesn't factor in a lot of very important things like returns, taxes, discounts, margin structures, a split between new or returning customers. It doesn't factor in lifetime profits of a new customer cohort. So many, many, many things that are very important to look at to see how much profit are we actually making with our marketing efforts. And so there's actually situations where you could have a 6.0 ROAS and make actually less profit than a 1.2 profit ROAS, right? So I'm going to dive into this a little bit deeper just to show you like the old idea on how e-commerce brands operated like before, I would say 2022, and now how things are changing with the rising marketing costs and everything. It's like the old model or the old idea was always like optimizing for ROAS. There was no straight connection between marketing metrics and cash flow. So there were a lot of inefficiencies in marketing spend, and also agencies worked in zeros, right? I'm going to explain that a little bit deeper in a second. And ad accounts either missed data or are inflated with, for example, returning customers and view conversions, which is basically not so nice because in most of the channels, you want to acquire new customers, right? So that kind of got us to the trend where everybody fights about the right attribution model. And I'm not going to talk about attribution today. I'm basically going to talk about a lot of numbers that have nothing to do with attribution. Numbers you see in your daily dashboard in Clar every day, and numbers that are very important. And so the new model is optimizing for POAS. It's going to be profit on ad spend. I think we need to start thinking more in marketing teams to use real-time profit and loss calculations to allocate budget. No need for third-party attribution tools. That is optional. Yeah, can have a little bit more performance if you look at third-party attribution tools, but actually I love working without them because it forces us to just have a more holistic view and also marketing teams. And in 90% of the cases, the new ROAS targets and higher CAC targets, if we look at the controlling the right way before we start doing marketing, means that we have a lot of high CM3 opportunity windows that we can use to reach high volume days, for example, in sales events. I'm going to talk about that in a second, how you can do that. And
just quick. If you just go back, for those of you who don't know, so the POAS essentially is the same as the MPR in CLA. So the marketing profit ratio is essentially the same thing, just a different way to call it. For those of you that don't use CLA, CM3 is essentially your net revenue minus all your variable costs. So minus product costs, logistics costs, transaction costs, and marketing costs. So kind of really what is left at the end of the day to cover, you know, fixed costs and make a profit. So just some terminology explanation there. And then just question from my side, why do you think that, well, it's called obsession with ROAS, well, where does it come from?
Actually, it came from this discussion that I wanted to sort of skip inefficiencies within ad accounts, and I was sort of annoyed from this attribution question everybody has. And so we started optimizing accounts more on CPC and also more on one-day click ROAS, for example. And we used benchmarks, which I'm going to explain in a second, from your daily dashboard, and built like some sort of cohorts. that got us the context of how much profit those activities with those benchmarks are doing. And that turned out, and I have a studies now in a second here too, is way more efficient than actually optimizing for ROAS. So in the world we live, cash flow is the most important metric. I'm going to show that too in a second. And I just wanted to fix the basics first, understand how controlling works and how to optimize that before I'm going on the more deeper level numbers like ROAS inside of an ad account, if that makes sense.
I mean, the question I asked was a bit different. I was kind of wanted to get to, like, why do you think brands still today focus so much on a ROAS?
I think it's some sort of a trend. I mean, if you look at how performance marketing evolved, when Meta had started like 10 years ago or something, there was nothing else than a ROAS. And then until like iOS 14 came, everybody just looked at that and everything also worked very efficiently without looking in other channels, without looking at how much returning customers do I have after I acquired this customer with this specific ROAS. There was no need to like look at all the different numbers because everything was kind of very efficient, right? And now there came this trend of all these attribution tools that try to fix this iOS 14 problem. And since attribution is most of the time, in my opinion, right, the search for who has the best lie of their numbers, I started sort of thinking differently. And that's what I'm trying to figure out with you guys today.
Yeah. So I also think similarly, I think there's three things. There's like A, back in the days, things were mostly efficient, so it was enough, right? Yeah. To look at the ROAS. Secondly, it's simple, there's like the tools have it built in. There's no any work really needed to go to levels deep and really integrate all the data together. And then thirdly, it's also, supporting individual people's agenda, right? They obviously want to make their numbers look good, and the ad account ROAS data always looks the best. So you kind of like obviously want to make your work look good, and that kind of makes it easier to just use the ROAS. We could now argue a bit on the topic of attribution, which I'm going to skip. I also do think it's secondary to what we're talking about now, which you're going to pushing, right? It's like an extra layer. It's not the primary layer. It's the extra layer on top of what you're saying now.
Yeah. I'm just working on fundamentals of understanding like controllings. And if you don't have these fundamentals, I would suggest not start thinking about attribution models.
Fair.
Like, this is the groundwork. And attribution is like the little bit of extra data that helps us maybe have 10 to 15% better decisions within our accounts. That's how we live it.
Yeah. Right?
Cool. So yeah, should I keep going? Perfect. So I got this meme over here, a classic situation when there's inflated ad accounts with a lot of returning customer revenue inside Meta or Google. Marketing team says, I'm having a 5.6 ROAS. What's the problem? Finance says, cash balance is still not getting better. And C-level says, we need lower CACs and higher AOVs. So everybody's kind of pinpointing to each other. And so we don't want this situation. We want to sit at a table and focus on actually solving real problems. And so just to give you a little bit of feeling, I have a screenshot here from a Clara account, from a client of ours, actually two case studies, just to kind of kick it off. You see a couple numbers here. We have this time frame from January to March, so it's pretty fresh actually, and the year-over-year comparison. And what we did here is we handed the marketing team the right KPI stack, not just ROAS. I'm going to show you in a second. And we focused on actually just two important customer segments to acquire the right customers and ignored other cohorts in the So sounds kind of like demarketing. It was also demarketing. We just focused on one specific or two specific cohorts, started a little creative factory with just two content creators and push our high profit cohorts. I'm going to show you in a second how you can find those within Clar and then do the same thing. So we shifted budget 60% pull marketing efforts to push marketing efforts. We kicked two agencies away, and 90% of the times there's way much enough resources in-house available if you start just focusing on the 20% of the marketing efforts that drive 80% of your profit, and clear reporting systems to optimize for CM3, so profit first. I'm going to show you that. So we basically just used no attribution tool, just a post-purchase survey. and a real-time P&L, which is Klar. So what happened here, we cut marketing spend by 6%. We have 72% more new customers, 59% more CM3, so actual profit, by 43% more net revenue after discounts and returns and all that kind of stuff. So that was very nice. And we also cut CAC in half. Second case study, basically the same. You can just see here is the CAC higher. So we have lower ROAS in that terms. We have higher CM3, 80% more revenue at 100% more marketing, same time frame actually. What we did here is also we implemented the right KPA stack and we updated CAC targets here. What I'm going to show you in a second is what most of the brands could afford way higher CAC if they would look at their unit economics and their cohorts the right way. I give you a little example in a second, but most of the brands could optimize for actually like a 1.6 ROAS or something, which sounds pretty crazy if there's the right volume and the right amount of recurring customers and a little bit of an understanding what a cash conversion cycle is and all that stuff. In that case, we didn't kick the agency. We just told them not to optimize for ROAS anymore, right?
How very gracious of you.
Yeah. Sorry. It's happening a lot of times. And then we placed one media buyer in-house to follow our processes for agency controlling. That is also very important. When there's a lot of agencies inside a brand, to get a good multi-channel setup going, they need to understand how the channels work together, right? I'll give you an example. If you send out an email, there is a nice opportunity window of a lot of signal volume from returning customer revenue, which allows us to scale Meta, for example, more. If you scale Meta, you will have more opportunities to scale Google more. There's like also influencer marketing, Meta, everything kind of works together. If you don't like know how Meta works outside of the account and you just look inside the account and you see this ROAS where there's returning customers and view conversions and all that kind of stuff in there, there's so much inefficiencies, it's insane. So what we need and what I'm going to show you is like a forecasting and marketing planning based on clear CM3 targets. And we use the data from the ad accounts just as benchmarks, right? So once again, here in this case, we even cut overhead costs at the end of the day, 8% overhead from net revenue while running on an 8-figure run rate. Pretty nice. So what did we do? Actually, that's the whole reason why I'm saying this. You kind of want to spend more money to make more revenue, right? And I'm always saying, so the question is, how can we be able to have the highest CAC possible and still be highly profitable? So you can suddenly spend more on your ads than before and not be like, oh, ads are burning out. We need more creative all the time. For example, here in a case I invested in, we had 141,000 euros spent on one ad, right? The highest performing ad had 70K spent. And we just didn't look at ROAS inside the account. That was just secondary. We looked at different metrics, which I'm going to show you now. So let's dive into the exact blueprint to get this done by using Klar as your single source of truth. If there is any question so far, just put it in the chat, right? Cool. First off, always start from a controlling standpoint. The question you need to ask yourself is, where is money hiding in your business? And I'm going to show you how you can find the money that is hiding in your business. So first of all, what's the KPI stack? We have at Ecosa a hierarchy of metrics. That's what I call it all the time. It's basically, and that's why Max and myself, we have a pretty similar philosophy. It's basically the daily dashboard, right? So the most important metric for sure is cash flow, right? That's the metric that says, hey, healthy business or not. Underlying these cash flow metrics, there is business metrics. Those are the blended metrics, marketing efficiency ratio, overall ad spend, revenue. And it's also a very important one in our opinion. And then we have the customer metrics like new customers, CAC, acquisition MER, retention rate. And then before we look at the channel metrics, right? And this is the very important part now. Before we look at ROAS inside the account, you're always force yourself to look at these top metrics first. So don't look at ROAS without looking at these metrics in the same time. And that forces you to look out of the ad account. That forces you to not just look inside the ad account, look at ROAS, CPM, CPC, CPA. It forces you to use ULTR and build a cohort and understand a little bit more how does these metrics affect these metrics. And that's what I'm going to show you now. So first off, what is very important to understand, customers are not the same. Your target audiences are not the same, right? It's there's so many different people from so many different problems and awareness stages they come from. So what we need to find out first is who are these customers? And to create this context, we build cohorts based on three things most of the times. That is time, offer, and product. Those three things, right? And after that, we start looking into the marketing channels and ask ourselves, actually, what are the high CLV cohorts? So you're going to probably ask yourself, how does that work? I'm going to show you now. First off, what we always do, I have a little example here of a daily dashboard. We have the February 4th to 11th and the time frame before. So it's 7 days. And then in comparison, 7 days before the actual time frame. The blue bars over here are where we put an offer sideways. It was a 3-4-2 offer. So basically, like buy one, get one for free thing. And I compare it with the time frame before without having the offer. So it's just very top level without diving into the marketing account, right? So we analyze time cohorts on a top level, look at the daily dashboards, and if you scroll down a little bit, you have the AOVs. What can you see here? We have an increase in CAC, right? So we go from 30 to 39, but at the same time, we also have an increase in AOV, 24% from 155 net to 180 net, and a massive increase in CM3, like 109% at 134% more net revenue at just 123% more spent. And you can very simple see, we launched the offer, like a lot of returning customers come back. That was like a 60K day or something. Then it drops down a little bit. We started acquiring customers here. We pushed the ad spend over here. Efficiency went down. And then like a couple days before the actual offer ends, we are still pushing, like put a couple bid caps in the ad account, right? Just push through. And as long as CM3 is staying positive, you can just push, right? So this is the first.
So essentially, sorry, just to, you essentially had like the before was just site as usual, and then you just implemented a site-wide buy two, get three, essentially offer.
Exactly. And so this is just a simple cohort or time comparison between how is the site, the offer working and how is it without the offer working? And what does that mean in terms of what is the ROAS target? What is the CAC target? How much can we actually scale if we look into the CM3 report on a daily basis, right? So this is very top level in the first place. We're going to dive deeper now. I'm going to have this one, right? Go deeper. There's this cohort comparison report. Max can probably explain a little bit better than me. But what we always do is we have like filters here. On Meta, for example, you have a couple campaigns or on Google that are on one specific product. So what I look at is how much ad spend do I push through a specific product or offer, and how much actually do I sell in my backend? So there's no attribution, it's just like a real-time P&L. And this report, if you filter on SKU, shows you all the different products and how much customers you have, how the time lag between first and second order is, right? But what is very interesting, for example, in terms of cash flows, is when the time lag is shorter than 58 days, that is between the time frame of the American Express, how is it called in English? Zahlungsziel?
Payment terms.
Payment terms, right? So, which means like a lot of returning customers are coming before the costs of acquiring them get booked away from your account, right? Second option is also you see here the repeat purchase rate, and you want to push budget through the cohorts that have the highest repurchase rate and highest CLV here after 90 days and 365 days, right? Just very top level, actually. There's also this first order tax option. if you put, for example, in Shopify first order tags, you could go just and tag the bundle or the offer or whatever you're selling, and then, or discount code, for example, if you work with influencers. And so you can break down the cohort, not just by top level, I put site-wide offer, but just also go deeper and ask yourself, okay, how much spend do I have in an account? And how much did I sell from of this specific offer, right? If you just tag it the right way.
So if you just go back, just to reiterate it for people, I mean, we can essentially, it's a bit smallish, but I mean, I can read it, so I hope everybody else can. We can see here the top two products there essentially have, you know, 20 euro higher lifetime value than the average, and, you know, a 30 to maybe 40 higher euro higher lifetime value than the next best products. So essentially, you know, you are able to afford, you know, 20, 30 euros a higher CAC while still having the same profitability overall. And that's just really what Nico, I think, is just simplifying it, getting to, is just understanding, you know, what types of offers, aka also sometimes products, actually result in customers being more likely to come back.
Yep, exactly. Cool. Next slide,
please.
Let's go. Actually, because Rico was asking, so which ads should I turn off and on now? How do I like get this view inside the ad account? I'm gonna do that in a second. I'll show you. Actually, here, right? We have this sheet here. Maybe that's also a thing we could build in Clara at some point. We have an incremental offer and product sheet. Actually, now we're building this bridge to the marketing KPIs. What I put into this sheet here is basically what narrative or messaging do we use? When do we start the ad and what's the offer? And when do we end the ad and what's the offer? Or actually the offer. How much revenue and spend and CAC, acquisition MER, and then also acquisition profit, MER, new customers, returning customers, AOV, and COV extensions do I have on this cohort, right? So inside the ad accounts, you see there's Meta one-day click ROAS and Google one-day click ROAS. We optimize in big ad accounts that have like 200, 300, 400K spend per month. We always optimize for one-day click ROAS. Why? Because this number is actually the closest to the actual sale, right? And if that number is good, the chances are very high that if you extend the attribution window, right, the larger attribution window will be on a good ROAS too. So we use this one-day click ROAS, even if it's 0.6 or 7 or whatever your target is or your benchmark, as our optimization window. And you'll be surprised how much opportunity windows you miss that don't hurt your CM3 if you just skip the ROAS inside the ad account that is maximum inflated. Most of the time, people and like most of the accounts we go through, they have like a 7-day click, 1-day view attribution window. So if you have a case that has a lot of returning customers, you have inflated ad accounts. It's crazy, right? Last week I had an account, 400K spend per month. They just optimized on 7-day click, 1-day view. Was most of the spend, I was like, okay, look at the 1-day click ROAS, and we switched the whole account and cut like CAC by half, right?
Yeah.
It's like crazy. Yeah,
I think so. I looked at, I think, two or three accounts in the last week or week and a half where more than 70% of the conversions came from view conversions. And that's especially if you're a larger brand. You know, Meta is incredibly good at identifying which of your existing customers is likely to be coming back and buying again soon, and just showing them impressions and then essentially signing them a full conversion, which is getting the same value as a one-day click new customer conversion, whereas the actual impact of your business is, you know, completely almost different.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So view conversions are, just to give you guys an explanation, it's just like somebody sees an ad and buys within a one time, within this time frame. And Meta and also Google, they want to give you for sure the feeling that their accounts are the most profitable, since they want you to spend more money with them, right? So the same problem is in Google. Google is per default last click attribution. So brand accounts are almost all the time highly inflated. I can highly suggest you put a post-purchase survey on your thank you page. Ask, I'm going to show you, where did you hear the first time about us? And if it's just like 5 to 6% Google, but you spent like 50% on your marketing budget on Google, try to cut it. Make a holdout test like for a week or something and look what's happening with your theme, theme three, right? That's what I suggest. Okay.
Yeah. Just a small little caveat here.
Yeah.
Once you are bigger in terms of revenue, you know, and once your time to purchase gets longer, these things become a bit more complicated and complex, right? So I think we're still operating here, mostly talking about brands, I guess, which are, you know, in that sub 10, sub 20 at most million range, are not super established, and also they don't have like a database of 500,000 customers. So, and they don't have, you know, conversion cycles of, you know, a month upwards. If any of these things apply, you know, things are a bit more nuanced and complex. And I think what you're saying, that doesn't hold 100% all the time.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Not 100% all the time. There's all sorts of different situations. You can always need to dive a little bit more deeper. But just a lot of
things. In a bit of a general workshop, you have to, of course, generalize, and you can't cover all the aspects. But I think as a rule of thumb, what you're saying makes sense.
Yeah, sure. That's some sort of my thing to think in absolutisms most of the times, since I was just confronted so much with these problems and saw so many young and amazing founders that just looked at the wrong numbers. So double check post-purchase survey results. That's what I told you. If you don't have a post-purchase survey, put it in there. There's like amazing Shopify apps, for example, like Grapevine or like Faring post-purchase. I think Max, you guys even have like the connection to your attribution models, right? So it factors in these data points into how much like sales get attributed to which channel. And scaling is basically just more relevant new impressions now from your most valuable first touch channels and cohorts, right? So you want to double check how much percent of new customers, so put that in the post-purchase survey, come from which channel, and how much spend do you have in these channels? And if you build the cohort, like I was telling you, you can basically build the connection to your marketing efforts and see how much CM3 those channels actually do, right? So I'm gonna dive a little bit deeper. Ask yourself once more, last time, what are the 20% of your customers that drive 80% of my profit? And then we put all these people now in one Klaviyo segment, and then we'll save that one for a second and dive into that now. And
just one comment also on the post-purchase service stuff. So if you're not familiar with the topic, so A, we have quite a lot of content in our Clark Academy explaining best practices around how to set it up, because there's not really a one size fits all what's the best way to set it up, because it depends on what you do in your marketing mix. Yeah. And plus also the first workshop that we did was with Jeremiah, the founder of NoCommerce, another post-purchase service tool we integrate with. So we also talk quite a bit around the topic doing that in that workshop. So if you want to revisit that, feel free to.
Very cool. All right. Here we are. So what is our goal now? Since we know our cohorts and which customers drive which profit, actual CLV, not just revenue, our goal is actually to have a forecast that is mixed with actual sales actions, right? So offers at a specific time, which email do we send here? When do we scale what channel? And with clear CAC targets and AUVs. If you look here, we have like all the different month, right? So the CAC target is like changing over time all the time. So we are pushing here like cold push before Black Friday, Cyber Monday, for example. So we go here up to 45 euros CAC. And then in these times, we go lower a little bit with the CAC because we bought so much impressions over here. And then you put everything in here, you just found out through your cohorts, and then you try to just, yeah, put your acquisition efforts on the most important cohorts. And you'll be blown away on how low of a new customer ROAS you can probably optimize for, as long as you manage to like also forecast your returning customer business that comes from these cohorts. So that is basically this connection to the P&L, if that makes sense. So now we are able, since we finished the controlling standpoint, to let the marketing games begin. And now it's time, in the first place, to really understand your high CLV cohorts, like really. And what does that mean? That is me, actually another rare picture of calling Skinbro clients. I was calling Skinbro clients because I never used skincare by myself. And Skinbro is, as the name mentions, a man's skincare brand. And I was really blown away when I found out their deepest insecurities because of their pimples and like, anti-aging stuff. It was really crazy. What did I do? I put all these people we put in the Klaviyo segment, we sent out an email with a Calendly link, and then we had like 20 to 30 appointments for a 15-minute call. And then we called the people. I was actually calling with them. I used Fireflies to record the call. And then what I did is I went really, really deep into these cohort people, right? So I was asking, what are the problems they're actually trying to solve? I waited for the answer. I asked, why is that important to them? I waited again, and then I asked again why. I showed empathy. I was repeating this at least, five times or something. And then additionally, what I did is I asked, what were their most frequent questions before purchasing? Why is that important to them? What did they look at besides your brands? Any different brands, any different solutions or product, right? And just a little hack. One of the things I'm always really suggesting is that founders or people that are having our team leads or heads or whatever that do marketing, make this a routine. Like, block half an hour a week, call your best customers and try to understand what is going on in their heads. And actually, like, what they're saying to you is most of the times like perfect copy also, right? So this is very important. So we want to understand what's the difference between these customers we just segmented that bring you so much cash flow, and what is the difference to all the other guys, right? Customers are not the same. So we save the answers, we need them later. And then question again is, what is scaling now, right? How do we get this into the ad account, all these informations? What we want is, scaling is basically if you scale vertically, if you just spend more money on a specific target group, right? You want to reach deeper in the market that you just don't want to talk about the features of your product. You don't want to say, we have the best quality and all the ingredients and all that kind of stuff. That is not interesting what you do. What interesting is get people that aren't even aware of their desire by your product to get them aware. And you can just understand that by these like classic, right, awareness stages. I think most of you guys, if you have more money, dived into these things. That's just an internal thing over here. It's like you want to reach into the mass market and systematically create messages that really go deep into your market and like get this main market moving. Like, there's this big chasm, right? This big gap of people that are pretty product aware and solution aware to those people that aren't even aware that your product is actually the solution to their deepest problems. Right? So you need to understand these people better than they understand themselves. And then you're able to actually build and create messaging inside an account where there's this question answered, why should I even change something in my life? Why should I even change something now? You want these like secrets, stories, and mental journeys and aha moments of your clients inside of a creative, right? And then the magic happens when a great offer hits a complete new narrative. based on the deepest feelings of your future high CLV customer. That is where the magic happens. And that is where we actually build the bridge. Next.
Yeah. I'll mute myself when I'm not talking. But just to reiterate on a couple of things, if you maybe just go back, I think just to understand for people. So one is that you have to adjust your messaging if you want to reach you know, more of a mass market audience. Like what is going to work on like an in-market segment is not going to be working on like a mass market segment. That's number one. Then also, you know, usually at the same time, you have to, I don't think it's always realistic to expect to be able to get the same customer acquisition costs in a mass market segment than like in an early adopter segment. So usually you have to, you know, be able to afford higher customer acquisition costs to be able to tap into that larger market segment. And then finally, and I think that's like the first point you were talking to, it is a lot more efficient to, well, instead of trying to reach everyone, speak very specifically to customers. And then in order to scale, you essentially do audience stacking, right? So you essentially target different audience very specifically separately, instead of trying to make like a generic ad that kind of like tries to speak to everyone but essentially speaks to no one.
Exactly. That's how ad accounts scale. It's like having different segments of the market like stacked onto the side, like, right? You have different narratives and different offers at different times and different target groups, and you want to go deeper and deeper and deeper into those, right? Exactly. So where did we stop? We stopped over here. So, question to you guys. Did you master the awareness stages after the CHESM, right? You can just Google them. There's a great book. I think everybody that has to do something with direct response marketing knows it. It's like Eugene Schwartz, Awareness Stages, whatever it was. Very interesting book. Highly recommend to read that. And then most of the brands we talked to could actually, if everything else is in the right place, right, scale their Meta ad accounts to multiple six-figure spend just by A, reaching deeper into the markets where their high CLV customers come from, and B, implement a real-time P&L to use these opportunity windows I was talking about before. And that is basically the whole secret. So low-hanging fruits, what could you do? Just check your winning ad format, right? And change the messaging based on what you figure out by calling your customers, right? There's actually scripts, do make this a routine, call the people, understand really what drives them. Why do they want to change their problem? What happened so they got this awareness? And then we change the messaging and you just push through with updated CAC targets, right? So that is also me. That is the ad actually I was creating for Skinbro that had like 70K spent or something that was running for 1.5 years profitable. And I had like a overall workload of 4.5 hours, right? People were going crazy in the comment section. Why? Because I was really talking to these guys on a very deep emotional level with a lot of like psychology and stuff. And that's why they also like commented like, good advertising, nice. We do advertising every day, but this is nice, blah, blah, nice, blah, blah, blah. You want this emotion. You just don't want this basic UGC content creator in front of the camera with this basic sound. Like you don't want these ads that sound and everything is the same, right? So go deep and really try to understand the customers and create messaging around that narrative. So how do we do this? Actually, I wrote like a couple days ago, like a big prompt, just a couple weeks ago, actually. If you have the scripts from your calls, right, with the customers, I always put that in ChatGPT. And then I have this huge prompt. I don't know if you guys are from Germany or can speak German, but it's actually like a prompt that I want ChatGPT to help me out create angles and messages and hooks based on these awareness stages from Eugene Schwartz. And then I'm telling like, what do I want on the product aware stage, solution aware, problem solution aware, need aware and unaware stages. And then just try to find ideas, right? Try to find narratives that nobody else except you is pushing in the market, right? And which is also a big tip at this point is, if you look at all the other brands in your market, what they are talking about is probably, because they don't make all of this work, not as deep as you are going to communicate. And that is most of the times also the option where a lot of marketing from different brands and a lot of awareness they build in their creative messaging and all that kind of stuff starts working for you and not against you. And that is like the magical pinpoint, right? So now I want you to pair these questions of unaware markets, like ask the customers or understand why they actually got to the point where they want to change something in their life, right? And these questions and answers, you pair them with actual stories, right? So like secret stories or aha moments or did you know that narratives, right? And pair it with a clear call to action to act now and not just in a couple of weeks. And then enjoy high scale while you have ads that go into the deepest part of your market and still be profitable because you did the controlling part and can afford high CACs at this point. And that is the whole thing, actually. So little tip before we end this presentation, at sales events, right? I showed you this 3-4-2 offer thing, right? If you monitor your POS, which is the MPR, which Max was talking about, you can just put more money on an hourly basis through your ad accounts if you just monitor it the right way. If there's Black Friday, Cyber Monday, and we spend 20, 30, 50K a day through an ad account, we check in 10 a.m. in the morning. If the CAC is not 30% above target, we scale. 1 o'clock, 1 p.m. If this CAC is in the right target, we scale, right? If the CM3 is in the right place, And then at the same time at 5 p.m., you just push money through the account. Use a little bit of bid caps, right? If you want, if you go beyond like 3 to 5K per day spend, and then just look at the dashboard and check if you're on track. And the weekly workflow to kind of optimize ongoing and not just while sales event is to actually write down what is your messaging, what offers are you doing, use the cohort comparison report, check new customer efficiencies, and then start the media buyer actually, right? That's why I'm also saying like, if you don't understand media buying as a CEO or something, that's most of the times a little bit of a problem in my opinion, is to find anomalies by tracking the best performing ads and their controlling KPIs. And then you optimize for the one day click of your future high CLV customers. And then you repeat this process every week. Every week you do the calls, you put this sheet in there, you scale on one day click, and you just repeat it all the time and test and iterate until CM3 is fine, right? So a little bit pro tip, which is very important to get this done. You need a lot of creatives to get this working. There is a video actually I published on my YouTube channel where I'm showing this chart of how we think creative factories should look like. That is very important to get this done. And then enjoy more EBITDA by cutting inefficient marketing spend and scaling just to 20% of your marketing efforts that really drive profit. And yeah, that's basically it, I think. Yeah.
Yowza.
A lot of information, right?
quite a lot. Question came up if we can also share the slides later on.
I got my LinkedIn here, or I send it to you, Max.
Of course also connect with Nico on LinkedIn. Always insightful and entertaining, but also I'll share the link to the slides in the community, and then people can just also dive deep into that. I think there was some question around, I think it was a Miro integration. I think you only sent me a PDF, which I don't think We'll have that Miro integration. I'm not sure if you have a Sheets version that you can also share.
Yeah.
People can look at that Miro board if that's something that's not totally proprietary, secret sauce, Ecosa magic.
No, we are publishing a lot. Actually, on our website, there's like a huge, maybe I can pull that down. I don't know if that is working. There's like a huge process side and resources, and you can just look through, and there's everything basically on the page for free. So, yeah, just dive into there. All right.
If there are more questions coming in, I think also Dennis asked a question. I asked him to give me some more details on. Please, please put them in the chat. I think in general, for me to just think summarize, and I think also as a recommendation or takeaway, at the end of the day, nothing of this is rocket science.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. It is really not, right? It is just work, right? So it's not a simple like solution where you can just go poof the next big hack and you do this one thing and your company is golden, right? Yeah. It is a very clear path and roadmap of just steps and things you have to do that just many or most brands just don't, right? But if you do, like, or just investing your time on that and just having the process in place and making sure you iterate on these cycles, if you just invest the time there, your chances of, you know, success are significantly larger than just trying to find that next hack that's going to 10x your business in 2 weeks.
Yeah. There is no growth hack, right? Like, big success means big work. And yeah, so do the work and do the calls. Get into your Clar account and dive deep. Ask Max, ask me, whatever.
Probably better to ask you. No, but can you understand Dennis's question here? I'm not quite sure if I fully understand. He asked, can you make an example what kind of question that would be in the unaware stage with a product of your choice?
Yeah, for sure. So I think he's basically asking if we have an example for, we take skincare, for example. I'll show you the SkinBro ad, right? So what we found out, pretty simple, one narrative was men are buying skincare not just to fix their pimples and not just because there's great ingredients inside and also not just to look good. They buy this because they want to attract women, right?
Surprise. So
pretty simple, surprise. And so if there's a man not using skincare, they probably think about a lot of things to fix their dating game and not skincare. And so the hook in the ad I was showing with the 70K spent was basically a girl on the street, and we interviewed her, and we asked her, on a scale on 1 to 10, how important is a man with good skin for you? Or like a man that smells good, or like a man that takes care of himself, right? And she's like, a 10, right? And so in the next part, I was like, okay, we understand. But let's look at the facts, right? If your skin is getting this and that problem, blah, blah, you probably do this and that. So the whole ad was based on just like diving really deep into the market and educating the man. I even like put away all the objections they had because I was talking to them and asked them what they were interested in their research before. So I have like 45 seconds of just making sure they don't have any objections after they click. So we have higher conversion rates on the shop and all the kind of stuff. There's huge documentations on our site actually on that. And so this is how you can go really deep into a market, right? You want to create awareness about that somebody actually has a problem and how they can solve it with your product, but they don't know that your product is the solution, if that maybe helps. Dennis, does that make sense, Max?
Sorry, just had to unmute myself, but yes, this makes sense. I think there's different angles to attack it from, you know, just making, I mean, they're also connecting your product to a different problem they may not have been aware about is actually a solution for.
Exactly. You want to address a bigger total addressable market, right? There's many people that have problems but don't know the product, and there's just not so much people that are actually Googling your problem. That's why Google doesn't scale until a certain point anymore. And then that kind of depends on what case you have, right? If you have a store with a lot of SKUs, that's sort of different in a way, then push marketing doesn't work so good. But in the most cases, you want to address markets in your push marketing efforts that are just unaware. Yep.
Nice.
Any more questions?
I think people are thinking, ingesting all the information. But
it's my biggest issue. I'm just giving so much information. But yeah,
that's good.
I need to learn to make it more easier in my communication.
I mean,
a lot is going on in my head.
Yeah, it's not always easy to simplify things down, but I think you already did a good job. If any more questions come up, maybe just also put them in the community. When I share the link, then I'll just pass them on to Nico. I'll just connect you with Nico, or just connect with Nico directly on LinkedIn and ask him the questions yourself. I think he's quite open to share. There's actually two more questions that just came in. There's more questions coming now. Okay, Dennis, one more thing. You were talking about that. They're also based on answers from your interviews, right?
Right? Yeah, exactly. So usually we have one creative strategy meeting in our brands within this operating model I showed you guys, where I most of the time say, hey, founders and C-level or CMOs should go in there, and then also the media buyers, and they put all the data from controlling point and the media buying point and all the data from like the calls with the customers into one sheet, right? And try to figure out, okay, what worked good, what not, what do we put more effort into, what not, right? And then usually it's like 80% we do more of what is working already, and 20% you're testing new narratives and new ideas until you have a little bit more winners in your account. Exactly.
Good. Just seeing if Mario's just getting back to me on that one question where I asked for some more information.
Can you recall one from your customers?
Good questions. Can you recall one from your customers?
Huh. Don't understand that quite.
I think there's a bit of a delay in the chat, I feel like, as well. So maybe just give it a few more seconds, but
yeah.
For now, otherwise I'll say thank you so much, ready, Nico. I think that was really great. Lots of interesting things. I think I already said like, hey,
cool.
One call from you. Okay, I'll just finish up and then we can look at Mario's questions after. But yeah, thank you so much. I think it's really insightful. I think very clear roadmap for people on what they should be doing. If they, want to build a sustainable, profitable business with a clear roadmap, of course, I think if they want some support and guidance on that, you're not going to be mad if they hit you up. But I think that was not the primary purpose. So thank you again. And some final words from you, and then I would say we lock off for today.
Cool. Thanks, Max, for having me. It was very nice.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Have a lovely Thursday evening and see you for the next one. We're still putting the next round of workshops together, 3 or 4 in the pipeline. We'll share them in the community. Probably the next one will be just a deep dive on all things retention and how to think about retention as an e-com brand. So that's coming up next, and then a few other topics that we're still planning out. So hopefully see you there and enjoy.
Bye, thanks.
Bye.